This episode of To the Journey is brought to you by Audible.com, offering more than 180,000 titles for smartphone, tablet, and desktop. To get a free audiobook of your choice and help Trek.fm at the same time, visit audibletrial.com/trekfm. And also by Enterprise in Space, an international program of the nonprofit National Space Society. Find out how you can help science and education and become a virtual crew member aboard the NSS Enterprise Orbiter by visiting enterpriseinspace.org. And if you want to join the conversation and share your thoughts on this episode, join the Babel Conference, our listeners group on Facebook. Just type B-A-B-E-L into the Facebook search field. We look forward to seeing you there.
This is Tim Russ, Lieutenant Commander Tuvok on Star Trek Voyager, and you're listening to Trek FM.
I think it's safe to say that no one on this crew has been more obsessed with getting home than I have. But when I think about everything we've been through together, maybe it's not the destination that matters. Maybe it's the journey. And if that journey takes a little longer, so we can do something we all believe in, I can't think of any place I'd rather be, or any people I'd rather be with.
To the journey.
You're here.
To the journey.
Hello, everybody at home, and welcome. This is To the Journey. I'm your co-host, Suzanne Williamson, and with me, as always, is
Zachary Frueling.
Well, today we're going to be doing an episode commentary on the Season 6 episode, Muse.
Well, I'm pretty excited to talk about Muse, Suzanne, because this is an episode I don't remember enjoying very much when I first watched it, but I've come to appreciate over the years. I like these episodes where Voyager kind of breaks the fourth wall as a whole and looks back at itself. And I feel like this episode kind of steps back and looks at the Voyager story as a whole from the third person standpoint, you know, almost outside the episode, from an outsider standpoint. It's similar in a way to that episode, Living Witness, where the Doctor's backup module was found 800 years in the future. Just stepping back and looking at the Voyager story as a whole, I find interesting. And putting it in the context of, like, something akin to like ancient Greek drama is really interesting, because you get this kind of Greek chorus commentary on Voyager as a whole.
Well, this episode was suggested to us in the Babel Conference when I posted asking for what listeners would like to hear. This was suggested by Patrick Carlin, which I found quite amusing because he is a fellow shipper. So yes, there is a sweet little shipper moment in this episode, and that's pretty much the only reason I watch it.
That's the only reason you watch this episode?
Yes. Yes, it is.
There's nothing else in this episode you like?
No. This is one of those episodes where without that, I would just kind of write it off. It kind of bores me.
I do have to say that while I've come to appreciate this episode as a whole, about two-thirds of the way through the episode, I start to tune out a little bit. Like, something does not hold my attention through the episode. But we're going to fix that today. We're actually going to watch the entire episode and have something to say about that last third.
Yes. We'll have something to say.
I'm curious what it will be. We'll find out when we get there.
So am I.
Well, Suzanne, are you ready to dive in and do this commentary?
Well, I've got my robes ready and my mask in hand. Let's do this.
How Greek of you. Well, if you'd like to follow along with us while we comment on Muse, go ahead and queue up the episode Muse in the viewing method of your choice, whether it's CBS All Access or Netflix or Amazon Prime or an old-fashioned DVD. So we'll go ahead and give you a countdown, and we'll hit play in 3, 2, 1, play. I love the captions, males in unison. Captain's log. I remember this being so weird, because it's like, we know it's an episode of Voyager, and yet they're talking about mm-hmm. Voyager stuff, and that this is such an unfamiliar scene for something in Voyager.
It reminds me of high school drama class.
See, I didn't do drama.
Except for the audience. I mean, our audience didn't dress up, but yeah, everybody on stage.
I think that's maybe why this episode never resonated with me when I was younger, because I totally didn't do drama when I was younger. What I love about this, though, is that I always thought Voyager was really epic in scope. It's like Odysseus in the Odyssey on this journey home. That's essentially what Voyager is. And to take a concept like that and put it in the context of Greek drama, what's essentially Greek drama, of course, it's an alien world here, I find remarkably interesting.
I really love the job they did on B'Elanna's mask. I mean, it looks strikingly like B'Elanna.
It does, doesn't it?
She told me her story, and now I've told you.
The audience is mesmerized.
Look, I kept them wanting them to say scene at the end. Like, nobody said scene! How do we know it's over?
I love this kind of thing, because this is what we're all like watching Voyager. We're like, oh, that was amazing. Oh, clap. Good job, everyone. This was great.
I don't know that I've ever given a standing ovation at the end of an episode, but I'll give it a try.
You should try that sometime.
I'll teach Logan to do it.
I love that they all want to know what happens next. Like, what's the next adventure of Captain Janeway?
Well, they should read the books.
Yes, hashtag read the books, everyone.
Yes.
In whatever this planet's version of ancient Greek is.
Now, his patron is very demanding. It's like, you're giving this guy just 1 week to write a whole nother play? Dude, come on, they need to rehearse.
Now, I have to remember this trick. Have you noticed how thin my performers have gotten? I'm going to totally use that trick to get a raise at work. Like, have you noticed how thin I've become these days?
Have you noticed how thin our podcasters have gotten?
Patreon support, everyone. Our Patreon supporters salute you.
So I guess they turn in that rock for food? I don't know.
Yeah, what was that? It looked like a roll of pennies or something to me. But
well, no, it was like a gem that he took off of the chick that was with him.
Oh, okay.
So he stole her jewelry is what happened.
He just like ripped her brooch off and...
Yeah, it's like, wait a minute, that was mine. Oh, the Delta Flyer.
Delta Flyer seemed better days here.
Yeah.
There's a bunch of candles, like...
Is there ever a time when a shuttlecraft doesn't crash?
Really? I just noticed there's like 20 candles inside the Delta Flyer. What is he doing?
I think Tuvok stocked it up. He was going to take it out for a little Vulcan meditation later.
Because this took serious effort. It's not just one candle. It's like 20 candles.
It's a lot, yeah. And how do you know it's not going to burn down the shuttlecraft? He knows nothing of this shuttlecraft.
Your servant.
And wouldn't you question that? You're my servant, but I'm the one that's tied up. That makes sense.
It seems a little backwards, doesn't it? Oh, the Voyager credits. I love the Voyager credits. I never get tired of watching these credits.
No, they're nice. I love the music.
Do you watch them every time, or do you fast forward when you watch?
I watch them every time because Logan has now started to recognize them.
Okay, so that's good. Oh, right. Like, it's raising up the next generation.
He's like, ooh, what's on? What are we watching? Hey, I recognize this. And then,
and this
like,
is my favorite
30
part
seconds
right here,
later, he's done.
Where they're going through the little nebula cloud thing with the little green illumination. That's my favorite part.
Would it change color? I don't know that much about science.
I don't know. And then it parts, and it's like the skies have opened. The possibilities are limitless. There is a part of the credits that bothered me a little bit, though, and I'll let you know when we get there.
Okay.
Because I don't think it looks...
Not there yet.
I feel like if they did it today, it would look a little different and maybe a little better. But it's awesome.
Is it the reflection?
Yes, the reflection bothers me. That's exactly it.
Well, the reflection bothers me because it wouldn't happen.
It bothers me because it's at the wrong angle. Like if you look at our viewing angle right now, we're about to get a reflection of the ship. The reflection should be quite a bit farther back from where it actually is.
But it shouldn't happen at all, because we went through that and that's just dust and particles. You won't get a reflection off that. It was space too far apart.
Okay, we are definitely in nitpicky mode.
We are.
Tonight, I'd say.
Oh, credits are over. Credits are over. Yay. Woo-hoo.
Made through another one. Yeah, B'Elanna's like, servant, and you have me tied up. B'Elanna calls BS on this. She's like, what's with the candles, dude?
Why does he think she can fly? She doesn't have wings.
Well, she came from the sky, though. Literally.
But in her broken down shuttlecraft, it's not going anywhere.
This is an interesting guy because he clearly seems to care about her and about Voyager, but he's also, he knows he needs another story. He needs more information, mm-hmm. so he's going to keep her tied up. But he does seem to genuinely care about her, too. It's an odd little conundrum.
But he didn't get the stories from her. He got them from the shuttlecraft, so, you know.
But now that she's awake, you know, she can tell him more stories.
Why not just keep pilfering the shuttlecraft?
She's like, see that phaser rifle over there? Bring me that phaser rifle, would you?
No, that would be Captain Janeway that would say that.
I love the captions. Electronic whirring. If you've never watched Voyager with the closed captioning on, you totally have to do this, listeners out there.
And why would he just willingly hand over this object that she told him to give him? What if it is a weapon? You're just going to trust this person that you have tied up that you obviously don't trust because you tied him up.
It's like magic. I guess what I love about this too, you remember that phrase from Arthur C. Clarke, the great science fiction author, who said that any sufficiently advanced technology is indistinguishable from magic. That's essentially what we have going on here. We've got a mm-hmm. non-advanced race that is experiencing some of this Voyager technology for the first time. And it's very magical. Like, wow, you must be magical. You have these healing powers. And she's like, no, it's just a tool.
But you're the Eternals of Voyager.
I love the phrase, shining Voyager far from home. Wouldn't it be interesting if we all thought of... Really, wouldn't it be interesting if we all thought of our lives this way? Like, you know, if everything we did is like this grand epic adventure, think how ordinary and mundane we tend to think of life as being sometimes, you know, the day to day, go to work, do the things, brush your teeth. But we could tell all of our stories as these grand narratives, shining whatever, far from home, doing this amazing thing. Why don't we speak in more epic terms?
Because then the tragedies would be 10 times worse than they already are.
That's okay. Because
okay,
the
I have
great
a question
things would be 10 times
about better the too. Episode. About the back to the episode, Zachary.
And I'm waxing all philosophical here.
She was unconscious for 8 days.
That's a long time to be unconscious.
That is an extremely long time. She has not had food or water.
Or water, more importantly.
Yeah. I mean, shouldn't she be dead? Instead
I would
of,
think
you
so.
Know, just slicing on the arms. And she doesn't appear to even have a head wound, really.
It's that Klingon physiological redundancy. She's like
makes
a camel.
No
She's
sense.
Got an extra water pouch.
Ew.
She's pretty good at talking her way out of a situation here.
Oh, yeah. Just take that knife and cut me out. It's okay. I won't go anywhere.
She's trying to, like, wrap her head around the fact that he's writing plays about her. Already
yeah.
written one and produced one in 8 days. This guy does fast work.
But now he has to be even faster. He has a week. What
yeah.
are you doing in a week?
He's desperate here. I need another play. You have no idea. My patron is going to withdraw his funds.
I love how she embraces suddenly being an Eternal now.
Yes,
we
Prime Directive is totally out the window after 60 seconds here. She's always like, cut me free and I'll tell you, cut me free and I'll help you make a play. Give me that phaser and I'll help you do whatever. Nice try, Bolana. Nice try.
Oh, come on. Just cut her free already. There you go.
He's doing it. He's doing it. Give him some faith.
She's got to be stiff, too, from sitting in that position for 8 days.
And there comes the phaser. We knew it was happening.
Oh, yeah. That poor innocent tree branch. It didn't do anything to anybody.
What's the next thing she does? Blow out the candles. Boy, the Delta Flyer does look really beat up in that scene, doesn't it?
Wow. It looks like Chakotay was driving. But he's not.
Or there. Counselor Troy, if this were the Next Generation.
Hey, lay off Counselor Troy.
Sorry, Earl Grey.
Why did she think there'd be power? I mean, really. You're in a janky shuttlecraft. It's a mess. It's not going to be able to fly anywhere. Why are you trying?
This guy's cute. He's feeding his pet Klingon.
I think she would break your arm if she heard you refer to her as a pet Klingon.
I love that line, you a poet or a critic. That's pretty snarky.
I don't
think
a handful of trail mix is going to get her through.
It's nice of him to bring her food, though.
It was like 3 bites. She took 3 bites of food.
Here, have a Slim Jim.
So B'Elanna's a flat earther. I never would have guessed.
Describing the earth as an island.
As an island. She's
this great island floating in the sea on the back of a turtle. It's turtles all the way down. I love that she embraces the idea of calling the caretaker an Eternal. She's like, you could call the caretaker an Eternal. Like, she's warming up to this dramatic kind of way of thinking about it. Well, that got too personal real quick there.
Yeah. But every good play has to have a little bit of romance. So he needs that for his play.
Well, it sells, right?
Grunting with effort.
Very descriptive subtitles. I find this interesting.
How do you grunt without effort?
There must be some sort of effortless grunting, but... It's a lot of electronic whirring in this episode, too.
There is. Okay, are the candles made of some sort of coconut? Or is it a giant acorn?
It's a horgon.
That is a pretty name for dilithium. Winter's
Tears. Do you think that stuck when she got back to Voyager? Like, we need to recrystallize the Winter's Tears.
I don't see B'Elanna keeping that.
Oh, come on. Surely this experience must have stuck with her a little bit.
No, Neelix would have kept it.
Winter's Tears?
Winter's Tears.
Neelix would call that salt crystals. He would call salt crystals Winter's Tears.
Well, nobody wants to get involved with a war.
Oh, poor him. They're already in, like, quid pro quo trading mode. Like, okay, give me the dilithium, I'll give you a story. Scratch my back, I'll scratch yours.
Oh, he thinks she's Storm from X-Men now. She can control the weather.
Thunder rumbling. And he's back.
And it's been raining. She could offer him a towel or something.
She doesn't even look in the bag. She just reaches into it to pull out whatever's in there.
Yeah. That looks nothing like the thing that was on the screen. That does not look like Winter's Tears. I'm sorry.
It did not look like Winter's Tears. You're right.
The dude in the background.
Okay.
I keep waiting for him to scream, "There will be no peace as long as Kirk lives."
Oh, yes.
Yes.
It's that guy.
It is.
Is it the same guy?
Picture of the Klingon. It is the same guy.
I totally never noticed that. From Star Trek 4.
Yes.
Yes, right.
Oh, poor Tom.
He just wants to, like, jump in a shuttlecraft and go to the rescue. He's such a knight in
shining
armor.
He's lost his girl. He's lost his best friend. He's got nobody.
He's, he's an ensign again. Or wait, is that happening right now?
I think so.
He sighed heavily, according to the subtitles, by the way. See, this is the part of drama I just cannot deal with. I have no ability to memorize lines. None whatsoever, so.
Oh, I'm good at that.
Are you really? See, I'm really bad at it.
Now, this part of the episode creeps me out.
Why?
The Tom and Seven thing? No. No.
It's fun to see these different interpretations of the characters, even though it's a play and it's overly heightened. It's just funny to take a description of a character and see someone else bring it to life.
The Borg is the scourge of the Eternals.
It's like, okay, now you've got it.
Yeah, she's not good at remembering her blocking.
How does this guy know what Seven of Nine is supposed to be like? He's making this up as he goes.
I guess B'Elanna described her.
They are difficult to understand. It's kind of an odd bunch of characters from the perspective of these aliens.
I'm sorry, but these actors need to embrace the character they've been given. If your character has no emotions, be that character.
Method acting is what you're advocating.
Exactly.
I see. You're right.
Yeah, that doesn't look like Winter's Tears at all. It looks like a lump of, like, coal.
Or like feldspar crystals and granite or something.
I'll sure be fancy about it.
You know, she must, pardon the pun, but it must sound like she's talking Greek to this guy. She's using all this techno babble. And he's like, what does any of that mean? I have no idea what you just said, B'Elanna.
Metallurgic technology, what?
Metallurgic technology? Alloys? What's an alloy?
Now, what if they don't have steel or bronze or anything like that?
He's just looking for a word he recognizes. Like, the universal translator is taking all these words he doesn't understand, translating them into something that he doesn't understand because those words don't exist in his language yet. And he goes, oh, bronze, I remember that one. It's the only one I know.
What if they didn't have any of those? They had their own things. Oh, Tuvok.
Neelix with his handy teapot. Here, have some Vulcan tea. It'll make you feel better.
2 weeks. 2 more weeks without sleep.
We know B'Elanna can go 8 days.
Oh, no, that's B'Elanna's been asleep 8 days.
Right. Had it backwards. Look at Neelix's hair. He has some serious bedhead in this one.
His hair always looks like that.
It looks taller than
usual. It's a lot of Aquanet to get that height. And teasing, you gotta tease it.
I actually recently just started watching Voyager from the beginning again for the first time in a while, and it amazes me how much Neelix's character is kind of toned down in the later seasons. You know, he's like, I'll just bring you some tea. The comic relief is gone by the later seasons of Voyager.
Mm-hmm.
The blue-green island Earth. I guess that's why I never found this episode all that interesting. There's a lot of, like, staring at candles in this episode.
Tuvok doesn't cry. Oh, he needs new actors. These are infuriating. He needs an entirely new troupe.
You're not a fan.
No, they've been given their direction by their director, who's also their playwright. This is how this character is supposed to be, yet they're improvising tears on a Vulcan. No!
Well, he's calling him out on it, in all fairness. Vulcans do not cry. What do you mean they don't cry? Try it again, but with no emotion.
Uh-oh. All because he was insulted? The armories are opened? He's a very thin-skinned patron.
A little reactive, I would say.
Yes.
So why don't you sleep on it before you go to war?
He is constantly asking for help.
Bring me more Winter's Tears and I'll give you more stories.
No. Didn't she want something a little bigger than that?
This is a great way of characterizing the Prime Directive. We Eternals aren't supposed to take sides.
She's already broken the Prime Directive.
Yeah, in 3 or 4 different ways already. Now, I do think there's something to this. The perfect play might stop a war. I think all of us have probably all thought about Star Trek in this way at some point or another, right? If people just kind of embrace the Star Trek worldview, we could stop wars with it.
Mm-hmm.
This is very meta.
Embrace people for who they are, not who you want them to be.
Good advice. Always good advice. He's desperate.
Oh, come on, B'Elanna. You know you want to see the play. You know you want to. You've been stuck in that broken down shuttlecraft forever.
It's like watching yourself on TV. Like, you know you want to watch yourself on TV. They're all like,
don't they notice that she looks surprisingly similar to the mask that one girl had? Nobody seems to have caught on to that.
I like this little miniature stage play so they can do stage directions and stuff and kind of block it out.
That's how they do their blocking, yes.
Is that a thing? Do
yes, that is a
dramatists
thing.
Use miniatures like this?
Miniatures, but mostly it's just, you know, drawings. But if you
like
had
the idea of
a mock-up
miniature
of your stage, yes, you would use that. Where's the mistaken identity? You gotta have it. It's in everything.
I'm sorry our Voyager stories are so boring.
We don't follow your normal tropes. My bad. That's right. You won't need those tricks. Listen to the sage, wise old man.
That is good advice. Just get to the heart of it. Great advice.
No, he's just one of those old guys saying, you kids are all lazy nowadays.
Back in my day, we didn't even have bronze. This is so true, though. People are always saying, these younger audiences want flash, bang, boom. They want pew, pew, pew.
Here right? comes, here comes, here comes. We're getting ready to see. Yes.
Your favorite part. Okay. I'll
My
give you the moment.
Because even aliens ship Janeway and Chakotay. Oh, yeah.
I love that they kind of threw everyone a bone here, honestly. Like, they can't have the real Janeway and Chakotay do that, but they can have fake Janeway and fake Chakotay do it on stage in this ancient Greek
And then
drama.
We cut to Janeway and Chakotay.
Nice cut. Good job.
Ha, ha, ha.
We appreciate it.
But they would not do that in the ready room.
We see what you did there, editor. Whoever edited this episode, we approve. What is an L-class planet? It sure looks like an M-class planet to me.
It wants to be an M, but it's just a lowly L. Nobody's really talked about Harry.
In this episode, you mean?
In this episode. I mean, it's been mostly No, and that makes me feel bad for the dude. As much as Harry annoys me, but still acknowledge Harry's missing. Harry's missed.
I can't remember because I haven't watched it for this, but is Harry not mentioned at all on stage?
No, he's mentioned a couple of times, but not as intensely or as much as B'Elanna. I guess because she's the focus of the episode, but still, Harry's missing too. And we don't know if he's dead or alive at this point.
No scene with Tuvok makes sense. It's okay.
Hey. It's perfectly logical. Okay, have you written a lot?
Have I written a
lot? Stories or anything like that?
No, not stories. I have no ability to do that. I've written a great many other things, but not stories.
I usually go in with an ending already in my mind. For him to have started this and not have like an ending point or where he wants to get to, I can't deal with that. I'm like, dude, you should know that already.
Yeah, I think my problem with the story is that I'm too much of an idea person. Like, I have great concepts and great ideas for, you know, just a setting or a situation or whatever, but I have no ability to flesh out realistic characters or realistic scenes or anything like that. I can't filter it down. Now, this is really neat. This used to be a sacrificial altar. I think that's a fascinating idea, and now it's this beautiful, you know, component of a work of art, essentially.
Well, I think if he doesn't come through with a good play, he might be sacrificed on that altar. It might be again.
Yeah, he has a great point, because you can essentially get the same cathartic release out of watching drama as actually fighting a war. Sure.
I know, but Harry got to kiss both Delaney sisters. Yeah, go Harry.
Well, they get to live out all their fantasies in these plays. She's like, why does it need so much romance? Says the Klingon who reads Klingon romance novels.
Yes, tell him about the Borg.
I love that everything has to be translated into something he'll understand. The Borg, part of a vast army. Oh, okay. Sure.
Insect colonies.
A great metaphor. Absolutely. They're like ants. They just keep coming and coming and coming.
There's I would say more ants. Of a bee.
Really? Like which insect is the best describes the Borg? You don't think the bees are too chaotic?
No.
Yes. Okay. Inside the bee colony. Yes, absolutely. Mm-hmm. That makes sense. But when the bees get agitated, I don't think of the Borg as being bee-like.
No, I still see them as being bees.
Interesting. I was thinking a bit more like ants, but huh.
Ants are extremely chaotic. Try kicking over a couple of hills. I did that today when I was mowing the yard. I was running over fire ant hills.
It brings this guy's like, I need my sudden reversal. It's like his phrase, sudden reversal.
There must be passion.
See, okay, B'Elanna's gone hook, line, and sinker here. She's totally into it now.
I'm sorry, there's nothing better than all that kissing. Keep the kissing in. You can still have the kissing.
I concur. They've drawn a total false dichotomy here. You can keep the kissing in and do all the other things. Yes.
Exactly. Then it's real life.
Oh, B'Elanna gets her great death scene here.
I love how he threatens to kill her.
He's like, I'm going to write your character out. She's like, this is my big chance. I get my death scene, finally.
And back to the janky Delta Flyer.
Old and busted Delta Flyer.
Doesn't even have windows anymore, Delta Flyer.
Oh, expect you to find a love nest there. That's hilarious.
Now, really, if you were going into the lair of an Eternal, would you just walk in and sit down anywhere?
Sure, grab a cup of coffee.
You expect it to be booby-trapped or something? They're an Eternal.
So they use Eternal booby traps?
I would think there'd be, like, you know, force fields or something.
I was thinking a little more Indiana Jones, like, you know, big rolling ball of
there's snakes. Tears. Why did it have to be snakes?
Picture Bolana as like Medusa or something with all this, you know, snakes coming out of her head.
That's more Clash of the Titans than Indiana Jones, but yes, yeah.
Okay. Yeah, I was thinking Clash of the Titans while we're going Greek here. Yeah.
Harry!
He's oh, there's alive! Harry. That's quite a hike, 200 kilometers.
That is. And only at night. Now, do all shuttlecrafts have escape pods?
No, I think it's just the Delta Flyer. Because the Delta Flyer is a little bigger than your average shuttle, right?
Mm-hmm.
This is a cool little theater, though.
It is. He still hasn't come up with an ending. Dude, you're running out of time.
Pacing across the stage. Feeling the
I
pressure.
Like how where the patron sits, there's nice...
Cushions?
Yeah, blankets, I guess, right? And furs. So he doesn't have to sit on that hard marble or rock or whatever it is.
Those seats cost extra. Those are the good seats. Yeah. See, they're not great at learning lines either.
Again, they won't have time to learn it. Come on, get your act together. You're a professional.
And professionals just learn their lines. Boom. Is that...
I've if you
really
repeat it enough times to yourself, yes.
I was trying to think of the last time I was in a play. It might have been junior high or maybe sixth
grade. Wow.
Yeah, this is not a part of my formative experience.
Can you remember that far back?
I was in Peter Pan once. I had one line, aye, aye, Captain. I was a pirate.
Obviously.
Pirate number Uh-oh. Four or something. I don't know.
The patron is not happy and he doesn't have his lady friend with him.
No ducats for them tonight. Yeah, I can't believe I never noticed that's the Klingon guy from Star Trek IV.
There will be no peace as long as Kirk lives. He could end the play that way.
There will be no peace as long as Janeway lives.
No, just leave it Kirk. Confuse the heck out of these people.
I mean, this is pretty random abstract stuff, like species 8472. Like, what the heck is that?
Yeah, who's going to play that part? I want to see them.
Someone volunteers.
What kind of mask are they going to hold up?
I want to play this member of species 8472. I'll sign up.
That, and he's telling the kid to run and get B'Elanna this note. The patron's already there. He's not going to wait that long for the kid to run up the ridge and run back. I'm thinking about an hour's time.
Okay,
patron's
this is
not
actually
sit there that long.
This is my favorite part of the episode. Yes. Tuvok snoring is worth the price of admission
on
this episode. It's even funnier with Sylvester.
As you were.
Snoring.
Yeah, Tuvok's reaction is just
This
awesome.
Is almost worse than walking onto the bridge naked, you know? I am ready to be relieved.
Oh, Just when I thought he was going to be relieved.
I
consoles
am
start beeping everywhere.
Tom's like, finally, something I can do here.
But he looks concerned. An F-type star and an L-type planet.
Obviously.
So I'm guessing they describe the Delta Flyer as kind of a dinghy off of Voyager.
Yeah, I think so.
It's a dinghy.
Like a rowboat. The Delta rowboat. Or the dinghy flyer.
I do enjoy this part of the play. Where 7 of 9 is the Borg Queen. And Janeway doesn't know. Dun, dun, dun!
That should have made it into the actual show, right? 7 of 9, Borg Queen in disguise. Oh, it would have been interesting. Like, it's just an episode about that or something. I'd like to see that episode.
Because you know it wouldn't have gotten past Janeway. Janeway knows everything. See, even now she knows 7 is the Borg Queen.
I love the delivery of these lines. I, 7 of 9, am queen of the Borg. It's all very noble sounding.
Mm-hmm.
Boy, and the patron is captivated. He's like, oh, he is into
He's
it.
Like, what's
big
going
time.
On here?
He is a serious Thank you. Fanboy.
Mm-hmm.
Next thing you know, he'll be cosplaying Chakotay.
He'll be writing fanfic. I have to know who's he gonna ship. I gotta know this.
In his fanfic?
In his fanfic, yes.
I think he's going full on 7 of 9 from the look in his eyes there a minute ago.
Okay. But who's he gonna ship her with?
I don't know.
Anybody, everybody. Just Janeway.
To be determined. I'm not sure.
Oh. Harry's got the best. It's like, let him. So what?
He's like, whatever. It's like, this so doesn't matter compared to getting off this rock. It's like, considering the fact that we need to get off this planet, this is a strange line of reasoning, B'Elanna.
I think Captain, I'm going to be late.
Harry takes a great kind of everyman perspective on this episode, because a lot of this episode is a little like, who cares? That was my reaction to this episode for a long time. And Harry Kim comes along and says, I don't care about any of this.
So what? Let him do it.
They do a great job appropriating all of the Voyager speak in mm-hmm. these plays, though.
Even the Janeway mask and the 7 mask, they mm-hmm. look awesome.
Bronze masks, according to the guy.
Well, those are expensive and heavy. Oh my gosh. You don't want to carry that around. Imagine the weight of having to hold that up throughout the play.
Don't you think she sounds like Janeway?
Well, seeing as how I'm just reading the subtitles, I don't know.
Oh, see, I actually have I'm listening a little bit, but. Here's our Greek chorus scene.
Oh, she took her own mask.
Uh-oh. This is seriously meta. She's playing herself. You know you've made it when you play yourself in a play. Like when Will Wheaton gets to play himself on TV shows.
Or Bruce Campbell, and this is Bruce Campbell.
Yeah, pick your favorite. Right, exactly. It's...
Okay, the old guy's saving the day.
He totally is.
He's like, please don't kill us all. Please.
Like, you are now in the play, dude. Yep. He's like, I see what you did there. He's like, you're good. He laughs it off. He's like, this is amazing. Keep it coming. Uh-oh, here comes the denouement.
Oh, dude, you're going to come up with your own plays. You don't need her. Now you can have Vulcans that cry.
Was within you all along.
I expected more of an E.T. moment. I'll be right here.
Not Terminator, like, I'll be back.
No, definitely not.
I mean, this is amazing. This is like, there's no, Prime Directive is gone at this point.
Yeah,
they're beaming in front of these aliens. It's all part of the show.
Yeah, and the patron's like, wait a minute, you guys just lied to me.
He got his money's worth, though. That was an eternal. I love the idea that the Voyager story has become this great epic mythology on this planet, like, for the ages.
Oh, yeah.
Because, again, I feel this way about Star Trek. Like, Star Trek has the potential to have that scope of being, you know, the epic poetry of our age. It could be like that if people thought of it that way. And yet, the general public doesn't think of it that way. Star Trek fans do or don't. I don't know. But I tend to think of it that way.
But the last lines were, peace reigns and hatred has no home.
Oh,
that's awesome.
Well, we made it through the whole episode.
Yay!
And we didn't lose attention like we said we might.
No, I think it's because we were talking, even though we went off on tangents.
Us?
Just a little bit.
Off on tangents? Greek tangents.
Isn't that a mathematical thing, then, if it's Greek and it's a tangent? Are we getting into math here? I don't do maths.
It's like the episode Virtuoso when the doctor tells the joke about the tangent. That's what I was going for there, which wasn't funny here either, apparently.
No. That is pity laugh. Pity laugh.
Thanks, Suzanne. I always count on you for a good pity laugh.
That's what I'm here for.
If I did end up writing a story or a play or a TV show, I would get pity applause from you, yes. I appreciate that. I do.
Especially if you write me in as a villain, that'd be awesome.
I'm going to kill your character off.
Okay. That works for me.
Give you a good death scene.
I'm with Harry on this. Let him, you know, hey. It's all good. Now, I do have a question. We saw them take B'Elanna, and I'm assuming they transported Harry out of there. Did they just leave the Delta Flyer in shambles? Or did they hopefully, you know, beam that out?
That's a great question. There's a dangling thread in this episode.
Yeah. I mean, Prime Directive is shot because they saw her transport and that guy was accessing logs.
I'm pretty much assuming they either beamed it out or maybe tractored it out, but probably beaming it out.
I hope so. Just leaving random crash shuttlecrafts on different planets throughout the Delta.
So in addition to this Voyager mythology that is now part of their culture, you're saying there's also going to be some Voyager ancient alien conspiracy theories floating around because of this mystery ship that is hidden in some mountain?
They have their own crazy guy with the hair that just says, aliens.
I love the idea of Voyager ancient aliens. This is like my guilty pleasure. I don't know if everyone knows this about me, but I love like these ancient alien stories. Even though I know they're total BS, I just love the idea of ancient aliens.
Hey, they could be true.
They could be. That's true. They could be true. Like any conspiracy theory, you can always save the theory. Yeah, absolutely.
Exactly.
You can cling on to that conspiracy theory no matter how much counter evidence. So yes, it's the Voyager mythology show and Voyager ancient aliens. Yeah.
I definitely enjoyed the episode more than usual.
Well, it's because you were watching it with me.
Yes, that is the reason. Zachary made it fun.
That's how I roll. This is an episode I've had to come to appreciate. I didn't really kind of get the gestalt of it. I had nothing to latch onto. I didn't do drama. I didn't do theater. But what I've come to appreciate later is just how epic Voyager, in the narrow sense, and Star Trek in general really can be. You know, this idea of a wagon train to the stars in general, and then Voyager on this grand journey home, just like Odysseus in the Odyssey. It's really epic in scope if you think of it that way, and yet we don't tell it that way. Why not?
Because then we'd have even less people tuning in. That just doesn't grab people's attention as much anymore.
You're saying the classics don't sell?
No, they don't, unfortunately.
These young people just want pew, 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 and they just want drama.
Oh, but all they have to do is look back and, like, read Oedipus Rex. It doesn't get more dramatic than that. I'm going to kill my father and sleep with my mother. Hello! That's insanity!
All these young people want to shipper this, shipper that.
You could find, you know, people to ship in Oedipus Rex.
Yes, I guess you can.
You could. I don't suggest Oedipus and Jocasta, but there are other people. Well, I would like to thank Patrick for suggesting this episode, because I do have a newfound, not love, but more of a heavy like, just from watching it with Zachary. It made it fun. So thank you, Patrick.
Well, I'm really pleased that you liked the episode more than you thought you would, Suzanne. You weren't totally convinced that this was the right episode to do a commentary on.
No, I was a little worried that we wouldn't have much to say, but yeah, I think we really didn't shut up the entire time.
I'm not sure we did have much to say, actually. But
at least we kept talking the entire time.
Yeah, I think the biggest thing for me is the theme. Like, you know, this idea of epic storytelling applied to Star Trek is really cool to me. That's the main takeaway for me. There's a lot of fun little things in the episode, of course. You like the shipper aspect, of course.
Yes, who doesn't like the shipper aspect? The aliens were even shipping Janeway and Chakotay.
Aliens!
You gotta love that. And I think the only reason B'Elanna was distressed, kind of disgusted by it, is because she sees Janeway and Chakotay's parental figures. Nobody wants to see their parents kiss.
No. Not particularly.
Ew. Gross.
Do you think it's possible, Suzanne, that we could be someone's podcast muse someday? Like, someone's going to listen to us and go, I want to tell an epic story about Zach and Suzanne.
Oh gosh, that would be amazing. But once again, I still want to be the villain. So I hope they write it that way.
My mask will be better than yours.
Shining Voyager, Far From Home, isn't the only thing we've been discussing on the network. So here's a quick look at some of the other things you may have missed elsewhere on Trek FM.
Previously on Trek.fm, Earl Grey.
And he's talking about how difficult it was and that he tried to do everything he could to stop what they were doing and not to kill all of those people, but he couldn't do it. And he just breaks down and he cries. And it's just like this really pivotal moment where the whole facade that you've seen for Picard for over 3 years is kind of stripped away. And you're seeing at his very essence who he is, that he's not infallible, that he has all these difficulties.
To the journey!
This is Jeff Foxworthy. You might be a redneck if.
Oh, Lord.
If you fall in love with a hologram,
you might be in a doomed relationship.
If you fall in love and it never really happened,
you might be in a doomed relationship.
If you fall in love with someone manipulative,
you might be in a doomed relationship.
If you can't even remember your own name,
you're definitely in a doomed relationship.
The 602 Club.
I'm glad you said that, Matt. I agree with you. I think that it's teaching Jessica to still try to trust people and let them in, even though she's been through the horrible things that she's been through.
The Edge, a Star Trek Discovery podcast.
Also, and this might be me reading way too much into this, but I feel like because Tilly ends up being so instrumental in what happens later in the Mirror Universe, part of me when I was reading this wondered if in the back of my mind Stamets is like, I need to have one person, and Lark is like, oh, I want to make my own oh, Tilly, that's who you want. Yeah, okay, sure.
And that's what else is happening on Trek.fm.
Check out all these shows and join the conversation about your favorite corner of the Star Trek universe and beyond. You'll find us wherever you get your podcasts. If you're an Apple user, be sure to hit the subscribe button in Apple Podcasts on iPhone, iPad, or Apple TV, or the desktop iTunes app and get the latest episodes as soon as they're published. And please leave us a star rating and written review. If you're not an Apple user, we've got you covered as well. You can find our shows on Google Play Music, Stitcher, TuneIn, Spreaker, SoundCloud, Windows Phone, in most third-party apps, and you can stream and download the MP3 file from our website or grab the RSS link.
Well, we would love to hear your thoughts on today's show, and there are many ways for you to share your thoughts with us. The best place to join in the larger conversation with us is the Babel Conference, our listeners group on Facebook. Just type Babel, that's B-A-B-E-L, into the search field on Facebook, and it should come right up. If you'd like to send us an email, you can use the form on our website at trek.fm/contact. Choose Message to a Trek FM Show and select To the Journey. That will come right to us. You can also find the network on Twitter at TrekFM and on Facebook at facebook.com/TrekFM. Well, speaking of contact information, Suzanne, when you're not busy cosplaying 24th century Space Medusa, where can our listeners find you on the interwebs and around the Trek FM network?
You can find me occasionally popping up in the Babel Conference. You can also find me on Twitter. My handle is KJaneWay8. So, Zachary, when you're not being the sage old man giving good advice that nobody listens to, where can our listeners find you?
Well, you can find me elsewhere on Trek.fm as co-host of MetaTrek's Trek FM show on Star Trek and philosophy. You can always find me in the Babel Conference if you'd like to talk about Voyager with me in there, and anything epic. And you can follow me on Twitter. My handle is just my name, at Zachary Fruhling. That's Zachary, Z-A-C-H-A-R-Y, Fruhling, F-R-U-H-L-I-N-G.
Have you seen how thin our podcasters are becoming? You should become a patron of the network on Patreon. Visit patreon.com/trekfm. That's patreon.com/trekfm to get all the details. Perks include early access to episodes, exclusive content, producer credits, and more. All available through our special patrons website, The Patron Zone, which also includes cushy seating. It requires a great deal of money to produce, host, and distribute these shows each month. We really appreciate any support you can give and hope you'll join the team. Again, you'll find all the details at patreon.com/trekfm.
Well, there are a few people from around the network we'd like to thank and acknowledge. We'd like to thank C. Brian Jones, the founder and publisher of Trek.fm, who has the biggest collection of winter tears I've ever seen, by the way. Our executive producers, Matthew Rushing and Kenneth Tripp, Aaron Harvey, our art director, Richard Marquez, our production manager, and Brandon Shea Mutala, our Patreon manager. We'd also like to thank our associate producers, a.k.a. our patrons, who have front row seats to our stage production of To the Journey. We'd like to thank Bruce Lish, Ju Kim, Richard Marquez, Patrick Carlin, and Norman Lau. Thank you very much for your support of Trek FM and To the Journey.
Well, join us next time, where just like Oedipus, we will be solving the riddle of the Sphinx. But until then, this has been To the Journey.
You want me to spell it in Greek? Greek letters?
No.
Zeta, Alpha. No, okay. Guess they don't have a letter C in Greek, so it'd be... They'd have to go Kappa or Gamma, I guess. Okay, that's not even funny. Okay. Oh, my turn?
I can give you the entire Greek alphabet if you'd like.
Oh, well, me too. I'd probably have to think about it, but I took Greek for a while. I just sucked at it.
Alpha, beta, gamma, delta, epsilon, zeta, eta, theta, iota, kappa, lambda, mu, nu, xi, omicron, pi, rho, sigma, tau, epsilon, pi, chi, psi, omega.
Okay, I could do that, but I could not do it anywhere near that fast. And how could you do it so fast? Where did you learn to do that?
I learned that from my 10th grade history teacher.
Wow.